Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Alonzo Bowden talks about performing stand-up in Saudi Arabia.
Haram means forbidden. Everything's forbidden. No politics, no sex, no drugs, no religion, no cursing. My joke was, my punchline for every joke is haram. Two women walked in, haram. Guy walked into a bar, haram. Everything in my act is forbidden in Saudi Arabia. So now I go up and I am just literally doing crowd work.
Today on the show, the 9-year anniversary continues with comedian Alonzo Bowden talking about performing stand-up in Saudi Arabia. Stay close.
Hello, this is Thunderon, also known as Alonzo Bowden, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. As you guys know, I've just wrapped up my 9 years of podcasting. I'm celebrating my 9-year anniversary in my 10th year, so it's very exciting, and I'm super excited about my guest today. But before we get to him, I want to say something. I hope you enjoyed the show last week with comedian Natasha Pearl Hansen and her story, which was called I Was Supposed to Get Married Today. And do you know Natasha?
No.
By any chance?
Think so. Not offhand, but
she's a touring comedian as well. And anyway, she was supposed to get married. They had an engagement date. They had the place. You know, everything was lined up. And then she decided not to get married. But since she couldn't get rid of the space, it was too close to the date, she just decided to have her comedy special there that day.
Well, there you go. That's good use of it.
So she turned, lemons into lemonade or something like that. Anyway, you guys, go back and listen to Natasha Pearl Hansen. But not today, like I said. I'm super excited for my guest, Alonzo Bowden. You guys know this man. You are everywhere, Alonzo. You've been working so much, so hard for so long.
I am what's known as a grinder.
You are.
In the biz, yeah. I'm always grinding, so it's all good. You know, people say I work a lot, and it's because I don't get paid much.
Yeah.
If I got paid fluffy money, if I made Gabriel Iglesias money, I'd work once a month.
Yeah.
But I don't.
I hear what you're saying. By the way, Gabriel Iglesias, one of the nicest people in show business.
I love that guy. I hardly ever see him. You know, one of the things that happens in comedy, as your career grows, you see your friends less. Yeah. But I remember when Gabe first started, I'm talking East L.A., $50 bar gigs.
Yeah.
And the first time we saw this big, giant kid, because that's all he is. He's a giant 10-year-old kid. And he bounded on stage in a Hawaiian shirt and short pants with that giggle. And we were like, wow. And he is phenomenal. And he's had a great run.
He's built a great run. Kind.
Yeah, Gabe's good people.
And you run into him in the airport or something. That seems where you run into other comedians in the airport or something. And he remembers my name out of the blue. It's just a great guy.
Yeah, Gabe's good people.
Really like him. But anyway, what were we talking about? How'd that happen?
Oh, just joking about how much I work.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But like you said, you do love it.
But I love it. That's why I work so much, because I do love it and I don't know how to say no. And oddly, you know, that people talk about the money. Some of the most fun shows are the lowest paying.
Well, you're here right now.
Here we go.
I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I got to tell you, you just finished 250 episodes of your podcast, Who's Paying Attention? And I have to tell you, I align so much with your politics.
Yeah, it's common sense is probably the overriding theme of what I talk about. I think common sense and humanity, we have become, not even we, the Republicans, they've become so brutal.
Yeah.
Like there's so much it's meanness for no reason, and it's control, you know, the whole thing with women, the abortion issue and so many other issues. The immigration thing is such bullshit, because every white person in America is an immigrant.
Of course.
I say it all the time, that the only difference with the current immigrants, they're 100 years late.
Yeah.
They're late to the party. Yeah. That what they're doing now is exactly what every Irish, German, Polish,
whatever. It's just so whatever hypocritical did. As well right. when you think about that these are often hardcore Christians. And it's like, wait a minute.
Well, that went out the window. They're not Christian. I've said this before and I always stick to it. They're not Christians. They're in the business of Christianity.
Yeah.
There are real Christians. Like, for instance, when the hurricane hit in Louisiana, right? The first people down there were people from churches.
Yeah.
Those were Christians.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But these people who use Christianity for political gain, for economic gain, to control women, they're in the business of Christianity. It has nothing to do with yeah. actually being Christian.
I sometimes don't understand how people are getting away with things. In that, like, I understood it in the Nixon era and when there weren't as many like tape recorders around and cameras, but now everything is on camera. So we see the camps at the border. We see these people put in cages, you know, huddled together literally with nothing. And now we are seeing it and people still don't care.
Well, you know, there's a number of reasons for that, I think. One is the news cycle is so fast, no one pays attention to anything.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing. And the other thing, I mean, there's no real reporting anymore, right? That's why I call mine Who's Paying Attention. Who's Paying Attention
yeah.
goes back. The original premise was that we've lost the fourth estate. See, the press used to be the ones who kept an eye on everything, particularly the government. And I joke about, and I don't know how old you are, but you know, I'm old enough to like 60 Minutes. There was a time when 60 Minutes knocked on your door, they would literally show people trying to run out of the back door.
Right.
Like 60 Minutes was on your ass, right?
Now
you sit down with them in the living room and talk. There's no the old reporters, the ones who kept an eye on things, that doesn't exist anymore, right? So they get away with, that's to me, that's how you get away with so much horrible, abhorrent behavior. I mean, You know, you look at Donald Trump, the idea of a sitting president being accused of sexual assault, just that idea
yeah.
would blow people's minds. And now it's not even a blip. It's
20 over 20 victims.
Not now. Even a yeah. blip in the news anymore. And there's so many other things. And, you know, we there's so much information. How do you sort through it? Right?
But I'm saying they have to have like a press room, right? They have to have the press room where the president comes out and addresses people's questions. But we don't.
Not anymore, right? The last.
There hasn't been one in.
Sarah Huckabee stopped lying to us around March. And then there was what, like, instead of a press conference every day or every week, there's like one. And then he tweets, you know, and. Trump is the most extreme example, but not the worst. Mitch McConnell is horrible.
Yeah.
And the other problem I have is the false equivalency, right?
Yeah.
When they compare Nancy Pelosi to Donald Trump, when you compare Donald Lemon to Sean Hannity, it's a false equivalency because
yeah.
Don Lemon doesn't just make up stories. Don Lemon was never standing on the podium with Barack Obama, you know, these are the things that inspire my politics. And then some of it is just
it's
ridiculousness of our society. But yeah, there's a common sense element. And, you know, people, you know, and I don't know.
Well, here's the other thing about your podcast, Who's Paying Attention? And one of the reasons why I like it is your voice, man, is like butter. I mean, are you kidding me? Now, I know you've been doing stand-up forever, and you do so much stand-up comedy. Do you do that in your act at all? Do you ever pull out like a Barry White imitation or something?
No. Because you have that.
You have like that Gary Anthony. You know that guy, Gary Anthony?
Yeah.
He's got that, too.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing...
As Cedric Yarbrough as well.
Right.
Very smooth.
The funny thing about the voice is everyone says, man, you got a great voice for radio. I'm like, yes, I have a great voice for a dying medium.
Yeah. Well, it has shifted. You know,
yeah,
it's podcasting, and now that's in everybody's car. I mean, it's exploding, you know.
I'll tell you the funny thing. I do a lot of voiceover auditions, and I lose out to celebrities.
Yeah, well, all the time.
Yeah.
That's so common,
you know,
I know.
Ving Rhames, Donald Glover, those guys, just they get the job. And I'm like, wait, I'd work so much cheaper.
Yeah.
I have the voice for a lot less money. But
I know.
But it's all good. It's again, this is the business.
It's so true. So. You hear people's voice like Richard Dreyfuss, Michael Douglas. You hear the same voices in voiceovers over and over because it's the easiest gig in show business, period. And there's a lockdown.
Absolutely.
Because it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter. You know, it's all about your voice and that doesn't change.
Yeah. And you can't age out or anything else.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, an example of that would be even musicians, right? Like I saw Cat Stevens a few years ago and it was like it was 1971.
Yeah, yeah. If they're lucky, some musicians lose their voice as they age, but most don't. If they take care
Barry
of it.
Barry Manilow, he's all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really interesting. Hey, Alonzo, now I know you don't have kids, but I have a child. By the way, her name is Alabama.
Beautiful.
It is beautiful, so, but like right now I'm starting to sort of regret that in terms of like, you know, like maybe I should have named her something more progressive, like Alyssa Milano.
Yeah, but Brooklyn was taken. North.
Anyway, my daughter, she's the cutest. She's 12 years old. And just recently, I picked up this new sponsor called KiwiCo. And, you know, it's a subscription box. You know what I'm talking about. Like,
yeah, so you get a different box
every month. Right, so there's like these food boxes and wellness boxes. But now there's these boxes for kids that are fun, educational, and helps them develop creative confidence to change the world. Because they are going to change. It's my daughter's generation. I always tell her. I'm like, honey, you guys are going to fix this.
Yeah, if we leave them anything. Hopefully we haven't destroyed it.
Honestly.
Then. No, kids are so open-minded. And kids are kids.
Yes.
That's what, you know, kids, before they're, I don't know, jaded or anything. So.
Well, and their minds are open. Children are the future. And it is our job, honestly, to prepare them for that, to empower them to be creative, confident, and fearless in all of their endeavors. And this happens with KiwiCo's innovative project. So here's what happens. Every single month, my daughter gets this crate. It's called, she gets the Tinker Crate. It's for kids 12 to 16. We made that bird over there. See that bird?
I see the bird.
It's super, super cute. Anyway, so we made that together. And this crate comes every month. And then you sit down with your child, like one-on-one, no TV, no devices. You're just sitting there. And they have very easy to follow instructions. And you make this project with a kid. And it teaches them about STEAM. Do you know what STEAM is?
I know what STEM is. What's
STEAM? It's so close.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go. Science, technology, engineering, art, and math.
Ah, they added art, which is very important.
STEM. Yes, yeah. STEM to STEAM. Yes, it's better. And so anyway, KiwiCo, you guys, it's designed by experts and tested by kids. You guys are absolutely going to love it. And here's what you need to do. If you go over to kiwico.com/storyworthy, you will get your first month free. KiwiCo.com/storyworthy and you will get your first month free. Again, you guys, KiwiCo.com/storyworthy and your kid is going to love this and you are going to love this. Alonzo, I just gave you a gift to give to somebody else when you have to buy for a child.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That's my point.
That's something great.
Right,
they can learn. I actually know a kid who could learn from this.
Yeah, it's super fun.
7 years old.
Right.
So
oh,
that's
perfect.
Right. He's right in it.
Cool. Before we get to your story, the time I spent in Saudi Arabia, which is super interesting, I did want to remind you guys to follow me on Twitter. Would you guys do that, please? And Instagram at Storyworthy. You know I appreciate that. And also, check out my other show, Screwed Up Stories, which is over there at Westwood One. And I got to tell you, it's a lot of fun with Rachel O'Brien, comedian. Do you know Rachel O'Brien?
Mm. The name sounds familiar. We all cross paths.
Yeah, so she's
sure
a comedian, and that's a great show. I mean, believe me, Storyworthy is my baby, but Screwed Up Stories is it's kind of slick. You know what I mean? It's in this really, you know, kind of fancy studio, and there's a producer, and it's kind of glossy, you know, which is cool, too. So go over there, you guys. Check out screwedupstories.com, and I would be remiss not to mention, oh my gosh, Story Smash, the storytelling game show. Alonzo, I would love you so much to be an expert judge on Story Smash.
Okay, we'll see. We saw how hard it was to schedule this, so
I don't know how we'll schedule that.
But.
Well, we'll try. And we're celebrating our 2-year anniversary at the Improv, 24 straight shows on July 27th. It's a Saturday night. It's an early show, 7:30 p.m.
I will be in Montreal.
That's right. You'll be out of town at Just for Laughs. So forget that. But I'll get you in the future.
All right.
Danny Zucker's on every single month. And we've had on some fantastic guests like Larry King did it last year. And it's a lot of fun. So you guys check out StorySmashShow.com as well. All right, you guys. He is here right now. Well, you've already heard him talking. Alonzo Bowden. Let me give you guys some of his credits because truly it's impressive to say the least. First of all, you won season 3 of NBC's Last Comic Standing.
Yes, I am the unknown winner.
Why do you say that?
Because they didn't air the final episode.
Bullshit.
No, seriously. That's a story unto itself.
Wait
but yeah.
A minute, wait a minute. Why?
What we don't know. To this day we don't know. What happened was season 2, I was a runner-up. John Heffron won. And then they came to us, and this is not my story. I'm telling another story.
I want that, yeah.
So what happened, they came to us after season 2. They said, hey, NBC wants to do season 3, but it's, and back when we did it, it was a reality show. They showed us living together and blah, blah. They said, no, none of that. The 10 comics from season 1 will go head-to-head with the 10 comics versus from season 2. It'll be like a pyramid, right? So we get to the finals, and the final 4 were me, Dave Martell, Rich Voss, and John Heffron, right? So we do our 4 sets. Then, this is on a Tuesday. Wednesday morning, we get word, show's canceled.
Oh,
and we're like,
shit.
What? What do you mean? It's the last episode.
Yeah.
And they said, show's canceled. So we're like, who won? So they're like, we're not telling you. Then they call back 2 hours later, no, the show is going to be on next week, right? Then I guess at the end of the day or something like that, they canceled the show again. So Thursday, Jay Moore is doing publicity. And this is when Jay was the host, producer, etc. He's doing publicity for his stand-up show. And he said, Alonzo Bowden won, right? And then NBC got pissed at Jay for saying that. So I called to try to verify if I won. And I'm like, is it true? And they're like, we're not saying. We don't know what's happening with the show. And I said, if it's canceled, do I get the money? And they said, yeah, you still get the money. I was like, I'm good. We're
wow.
cool. We're cool. So they didn't show it. And
the
then,
winner's money or any money?
Yeah, I got the winner's
money. Winner's, wow.
And then we ended up doing like a half hour episode because they used to show it on NBC on Tuesday
yeah.
and then Comedy Central on Saturday would rerun it. And when NBC canceled, Comedy Central, I guess, said, hey, we got a hole in our lineup. We need a show. But by then, it was anticlimactic. So it was all good. I'm happy to win.
This business is nuts, right?
Yeah. But, you know, people ask me if I was mad. And the reason I didn't get mad, and you know this.
Well, first of all, you got paid.
I got paid. But
that's
also,
the main thing.
TV is not personal. You know what I mean? It's not like I joked about that, yeah, Black Eye won, so they canceled it. But in reality, somebody in some office made a decision to cancel
you
the show.
You had nothing to do with
it.
But
they didn't care about right. Last Comic or anything else. They just did it, you know.
Yeah.
So it would have been nice. And we joke about it. Heffron and I, we're good buddies. And we joke about, yeah, we won Last Comic Standing. And we left with thousands upon thousands of MySpace friends.
Aw, that's funny.
Because remember, we did it before current
yeah.
social media.
Yeah,
so
it's a whole different thing. But the thing is when you get to those levels, those decisions being made, they're not looking at us or talent or even production as people. They're just moving. It's a different board of
all
a
business.
Game.
All
it's a
business.
Game. Yeah, it's like if you're looking at chess pieces.
Yeah.
These aren't people. These are just, it's monies.
Yeah.
And they're moving up and down and they're looking at a whiteboard on the office wall that is showing them this amount of money, and what do we do to make that happen or
right.
whatever.
So there have been all kinds of stories, personal. But nobody ever said why they canceled it.
Well,
anyway,
I bet you deserved it, man.
I did win, and it felt great to win.
You starred in the comedy special Who's Paying Attention on Showtime.
Yes.
You released the DVD, and you also voiced the character of Thunderon in the Power Rangers movie. What's happening? That's fun. That must have been fun.
That was at the beginning of my career. I absolutely stumbled into that. I was working as a truck driver for the show Power Rangers. That was my day job before comedy paid the bills.
No kidding.
I was part of the crew.
And good on you.
One of the sound guys heard me talking.
Wow.
And he said, hey, you want to do monsters? And I was like, yeah. And then they just brought me in the booth and I started doing monsters.
What did he sound like?
Welcome, Rangers. I am here to destroy you.
Oh, my God.
That was a bit of thunder on.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Later on, I want you to do a promo for me with that voice. Listen, you also hosted the Speed Channel's 101 Cars You Must Drive, and then also America's Worst Driver. So I know you're into motorcycles. You're also into cars?
Yeah, I'm a gearhead.
I see.
If it's got wheels, I like it.
I see.
And, you know, the funny thing about both of those shows, well, actually, I'll be honest, America's Worst Driver was a horrible show. It was one of those shows that...
What does it even mean? What's that premise?
Well, it's a big show around the world. It started somewhere in Europe, and it's a big hit in Canada. And what they do is they take, like, say you said I'm the worst driver, right?
Yeah.
Then they would come to me, and they have, like, you have to drive this course through the city, and you're being watched by a cop to see how many mistakes you make, and then there's like an obstacle course where you have to, you know, parallel park and do different things driving.
This is so Brady Bunch.
And they score points. Well, what we did for the Travel Channel was they would take two people. If you recommended me, I would drive and you would navigate. And we had to go to different iconic places in a city. Like when we did LA, you had to go from Venice Beach to Pink's to Universal Studios to Hollywood Boulevard.
Right, so it's far.
And then we'd follow you in a van with a cop, and he would be marking every mistake you made. And then they had a obstacle course at the end anyway. But anyway, it was one of those shows where they had a camera and microphones in the car to listen to the driver
sure,
and the
sure,
passenger.
Sure.
And me and another woman were the hosts, and we were kind of like the play-by-play announcer. They almost edited us out completely. It was a completely different show than what we shot. So it didn't go anywhere. And it's a big hit in other countries, but
it
here it didn't
funny.
Go anywhere.
The premise is there, but it seems like everything it would
the
be repetitive.
The execution was not so great.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And then 101 Cars You Must Drive was a great show. It was a fun show.
Yeah, I
and
bet.
And what happened, again, this is my luck, because I've never had a season two. I've never had a season two. I always get season one.
God damn.
So what would every show was 6 degrees of separation, right? It was based on a book by Motor Trend magazine called 365 Cars You Must Drive. And they had a different car every day.
Yeah.
So we were doing it. We did like all of one episode was James Bond's cars. And we had, a lot of people don't know, James Bond's first car in the book was a Bentley.
Wow.
And then he had the Aston Martin, the famous one.
Yeah,
and he
yeah.
had a BMW. And so we would drive each one of those
that
cars.
That must have been like heaven.
Super fun. We did Sons of the Fathers, cars named after the son of the founder of the company.
Wow.
So you had a Dino Ferrari, right, which was great.
That was the kid's car.
But you also had the Ford Edsel, which was the worst car ever made. But it was all fun. Well, what happened was Fox owned Speed Channel, and they sold it. They didn't sell it. They changed the format.
Yeah.
They made it Fox Sports 1, and it became more baseball. And they were like, we're done with Speed. We're done with the coal car. And So you know, that was that. So
yeah, and then
everyone's like,
what
happened to 101 cars? I said, well, we did 51 cars. You must drive.
But that must have been, did you get to drive them then?
Oh, yeah.
Every day you drive 4, 5, 6 cars?
I got to drive everything from a Model T to a Dino Ferrari to the Mercedes Moog, which
can you
is
imagine
bigger
how many,
than a Hummer.
How many people would want to do that?
Oh, it was fantastic.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
And then you've been on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, Late Night with Conan O'Brien, The Late Late Show with Greg Kilborne, Keenan Ivory Wayans Show. That was a good show.
That was a good show. Only lasted one season. I was his first comic, though.
Oh,
which was
no
very
kidding.
Cool.
Wow.
Very cool, yeah.
That's awesome. And then you've had all these comedy albums. My gosh, you just have so much content. And then your film credits include Scary Movie 4, The Girl Next Door, Bringing Down the House. And then you travel around the world entertaining USO troops, all the way from Iraq to Greenland. And now you're doing what I find like the most exciting, because I love game shows. You're hosting Family Feud Celebrity Editions.
That was really fun.
And you would go out on cruise ships and do this?
No. We did theaters and casinos. It was a live touring version of Family Feud.
What a blast.
And it was really fun. And I'm hoping there are more. I hope they do it again.
How could they not?
The company that owns the show, Fremantle, they've been touring The Price is Right for years. So I hope they do more because we had a great time. It was with Grocery Store Joe. Who's Joe Amiable? He's kind of a reality star. He did Bachelor in Paradise and Dance with the Stars. And we had Kathy Rigby.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the Olympic gymnast from a long time ago.
And, so I hope they do more.
That's a lot of fun.
Let's hope for more than one season.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is just where my storytelling game show comes in, Story Smash. I mean, it's perfect for touring around. It's perfect for kids. It's perfect for all ages. And it's going to make an amazing party game.
All right.
Well, so, you got to be there. Spin the wheel, tell a story. That's it. Yes.
All right.
You're going to love it. All right, you guys. You can find Alonzo over there on Twitter at Alonzo Bowden. That's with two D's. You know that. And also at his website, alonzobowden.com. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Alonzo Bowden.
Thank you. So I'm going to tell you the story of what we affectionately call the Saudi Arabia gig. And this just happened in the past month. So Jamie Masada, the owner of the Laugh Factory in Hollywood, who I've known my entire career, I love Jamie, but I also know Jamie. Jamie is Jamie.
Yeah.
Jamie has a lot of people don't like Jamie, don't understand Jamie. What I've learned about Jamie is Jamie's a good guy. He has his own logic. Mm-hmm. In his head, things go together, but you kind of learn this is just Jamie. So Jamie comes to me and he says, "Hey, buddy, man, buddy. You want to go to Saudi Arabia?" And I was like, "Okay, Jamie, when? What does it pay? What's the gig?" "No, it's Saudi Arabia." That's all he says. So I was like, "Yeah, I'll do it." So come to find out that there's some prince in Saudi Arabia who wants to open it up to the West. And one of his ideas is bringing comedy shows in, right? So we go back and forth. The first problem is when. So that we get the dates, I have another gig booked on the dates. Now, mind you, this is 2 weeks, right? So this is like, "You want to go to Saudi Arabia in 2 weeks?" "Yeah, we have nothing planned, but we'd like you there in 2 weeks." And I'm like, "Okay, what, sure." Money was good. So I said, "I need a deposit. I need a contract. I need something because I got to cancel a gig."
Other stuff.
Jamie's assistant is doing us no good. My agent, my manager, when they saw the money, I'll just say this. It was 10 times what I was going to get paid by the club that I had to cancel.
Wow.
So needless to say, when they saw the money, their eyes lit up and they were like, "We got this. We'll.
Absolutely.
So now you've got my agent, my manager talking to Jamie's people, trying to talk to somebody in Saudi Arabia to find out what's going on, trying to confirm anything. Because, to go to Saudi, you got to get plane tickets, you got to get a visa, and you have to get the money. So now it's 1 week before the gig. Still nothing confirmed. But they finally send a contract, and I was like, "Okay, let's do it." They send a deposit. Every contract is written in U.S. dollars. U.S. dollar. When you work overseas, you have to make that a point. I've done tons of overseas work. Get paid in U.S. dollars. Yeah. They wire the money in Saudi money.
It's
one-third of what I'm supposed to get paid because of the exchange rate. But now I've already canceled my other gig. I've already committed. Supposed to do shows Friday, Saturday, Sunday, come home Monday. The airplane ticket leaves Saturday. They say the shows are Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, come back Wednesday, right? So now it's completely different, right? I'm going with Jamie Kennedy. He's the other comic. We reach out to Jamie. "Jamie, have you been paid? Have you seen anything?" Jamie's like, "Nope, I got nothing." But Jamie had been in touch with someone who was there, so he did know about the venue and stuff like that. Eric Griffin is in Saudi. Eric's texting, "Hey, have you been paid?" Like, "Eric, I got a deposit in Saudi money. They still owe me a bunch of money." Right? So now it's 2 days before the gig. We get the plane ticket straight. Oh, they asked for a picture to do a visa. So I'm in Cleveland. So I got to find a FedEx and get a passport picture taken and, you know, send it to them, blah, blah, blah.
Complete hassle.
They send the visa. They just took my picture off the internet and shrank it and used it. So it's just a picture of me grinning at some publicity headshot on my Saudi Arabian visa, right? So, so we get that done. We get the ticket. Now, it's a day before I'm supposed to leave. I'm supposed to get on a plane Saturday. We have no money, right? And my agent's like, look, if we don't, and I'm like, what are we going to do? Because I don't really want to, he's like, we're just going to keep their deposit. And I don't really like doing business that way.
Yeah.
But I also don't know about getting on a plane going to Saudi. It's a 15-hour flight, not knowing what you're going to get paid or what's going to happen. We get a wire transfer on Friday afternoon. The problem is the bank won't be open till Monday. So we don't really know. Like, you know, in other words, this could be just a receipt somebody typed up or it could be a real wire transfer. So my agents, being the sweethearts they are, who back me up 100%, send me a letter. It says, we are not responsible for the money, for the trip. Basically, if you go to Saudi Arabia and get kidnapped and killed, well, we're sorry, but we'll hold the deposit. Right? So a friend of mine, who she's a lawyer, and she reads, she's like, this is BS. They can't do this. And the other thing they tried to do was charge me a fine for canceling the gig that I was supposed to do. And there's nothing in the contract about a fine. I've never heard of a fine for canceling a gig. It happens all the time. You have a club booked, and clubs know it. You get something better. You cancel. I'm sorry. I'll make it up at a later date, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or just you hate me and we won't work anymore. One or the other. But a fine? So I told my agent, I said, look, I'm not paying a fine. It's not. And I said, a lawyer looked at this. There's nothing. And then they get upset. What do you mean a lawyer looked at it? So, well, you know, I happen to date a woman who's a lawyer.
There
so I get free legal advice. So anyway, I finally said, screw it. I'm getting on a plane. I'm going to Saudi Arabia. Go to the airport. Go through the whole thing. Getting on a plane. Jamie's there, Jamie Kennedy. And I've known Jamie forever. And we're just kind of laughing because we don't know what we're walking into. We're just getting on a plane. It was a nice flight, business class flight.
Great.
15 hours. We arrive in Jeddah. We have no, and the thing was, we were supposed to do a show that night. Like, we land at like 5 and our show's at 9 that night. We don't know what to do. We don't, you know, we're just going, right? So we get off the plane. There's a guy named Tehran. Tehran is a comic. He works at the Laugh Factory. He is black and Iranian, and he works in the Middle East a lot, and he's there, and he's kind of hosting, so he kind of knows the deal. So he tells us, look, man, this is the show, blah, blah, blah. So we go.
But is it a club, or what is
it? No, it's a giant tent. Eric Griffin had told us about this and sent pictures. So it's a Jeddah. What's it called? Jeddah season. Jeddah is a city in Saudi Arabia. That's where we are. Jeddah season is a 40-day festival that goes on in Jeddah. People come in for vacation. Families go out. It's like a big outdoor. There's Ferris wheels. There's kids stuff. There's, you know, food trucks. There's music. And all of this is new to Saudi Arabia. The idea of music being played, they said music played outdoors, never happened before. That's a whole new thing. This whole Jeddah season is like a festival, big thing. So they have this giant tent, 500 seats, and a giant stage, and we're going to do stand-up, right?
Wow.
Now, Jamie was telling us, I'm doing this for your friends. There's nothing. You get the big sign saying Laugh Factory. We're like, okay, Jamie, you're in on this.
You know? Yeah.
Anyway. So we go to the venue, and Eric had told us, he said, listen, 50, 80 people come to the show in a 500-600 seat tent. And this is what's funny. If you can imagine, there's a huge stage. There's four rows of wooden chairs on the floor, right? Just ordinary wooden chairs. Behind them, up higher, about on the risers where the stage are, there are sofas, literally white sofas. So all the people who are there are sitting on the sofas. So now you have this big empty space in front of you, right, where there's like six people in these chairs. We bumped into a guy, Amir Khan, the boxer, was about to have a fight in Saudi Arabia. So he happened to be staying at our hotel and his trainer, whatever. So his trainer came to the show because he's from Vegas and he's like, oh, something to do. He's the only guy sitting in the first four rows. One guy. So now there's 70, 80 people. It's 10 o'clock at night. There are kids there. Saudis are very family oriented. So the women come out and the women are wearing the burqas, right? Full burqas and this and that. And they bring the children. Yeah. And so now there's a word, okay? Haram. Haram means forbidden. Everything's forbidden. No politics, no sex, no drugs, no religion, no cursing. My punchline for every joke is haram. Like, two women walked in, haram. Guy walked into a bar, haram. Everything in my act is forbidden in Saudi Arabia. So now I go up and I am just literally doing crowd work. I am pulling it out. And they're fun people, though. This was the thing. They loved it. They didn't understand it. They don't understand the concept of comedy. There are some Saudis who had been to the U.S., had been educated in the U.S. and so on. They understood it. There were like maybe 5 or 10 people who had been to comedy shows
in the
U.S.
But they were in the back.
They're 40 feet away, right? So now I jump off the stage.
I walk out to
the sofas and I start joking with them. I'm like, you know, because there's literally 4-year-old, 7-year-old kids. And I'm telling the parents, like, you're a terrible parent. It's 11 o'clock at night and your child's at a comedy show. What is wrong with you? And they're laughing. And the reason they do that is so hot during the day that they go out at night.
Wow.
The families go out after dark. So the kids basically sleep during the day and go out at night because it cools
that.
Off. Right. Well, you wouldn't think about it. But yeah, it's 118 degrees during the day. So it's not like the kids go into the park. You know, they go to the beach at 4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what they do. But we don't know any of that. We're picking this up as we go. So I'm joking with them. I'm doing crowd work. But you have to do it respectfully. You know, in other words, you're not going to make fun of the fact they wear burqas or anything like, because that's their culture. And I've been to the Middle East a lot with military. And I actually like the Middle East. The people, the thing about traveling around the world, and this is the beauty of traveling around the world, you see the people. My favorite moment was, it was in the afternoon. And our hotel was across from a beach, but it wasn't like a regular beach. It was this rocky, you know, kind of thing. But you could walk. And there was a little kid, 4 years old, and his parents are feeding the pigeons, and he's running through the pigeons, right? And you see something like that, and you're reminded, people are people.
Yeah, we're all the same.
They're no terrorists. That kid's not, you know, he doesn't hate you or anything. But anyway, so I'm joking with them. And I don't know what I was saying. I don't know what I'm joking. You know, it's just, but it's working. They're enjoying it. I'm joking about that I can't do this, that I normally do that. I'm telling them, you might recognize me. I'm Michael Jordan, right? Because I'm the biggest black person they ever saw.
Yeah.
You know, and then someone shows up late and I'm like, oh, you missed it. Michael Jordan was here. And the whole crowd laughs and stuff. And they're super people. And we have fun. Jamie goes up after me. Jamie does more of his act. Now, some of them recognize Jamie because Jamie's done movies. Jamie starred in movies. So more of them recognize him. But we're both like, we don't know what we're doing here or how we're going to make this work. So we finished the show.
How did he do?
He did good. Mm-hmm. He did good. We finished the show. Now we're like, what are we going to do? We go out to the food trucks. And they love us. And we ended up eating at food trucks, you know. And again, it's so weird because, like, it's 1 in the morning in Saudi Arabia. We're at a food truck.
Yeah.
What? This is where comedy's like, you don't know where it's going to take you, you know. So so that's the first night. So we do that. So the next day, during the day, there's nothing to do. You just wait for the nighttime to come. It's hot. We ate at the buffet for breakfast in the hotel. We eat at the buffet for lunch. It's hot.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went outside because, see, I get tired of breathing hotel air.
Me too.
So I have to walk outside. Now, Tehran, who's been there a while and who knows people, he's telling us, well, there are private beaches. See, here's the thing. Just like anywhere else, it's about money, right? So there are super rich Saudis who have private beaches, and they're very Western. Women are in bikinis and blah, blah, right. blah. So Tehran, of course, is going to take us to one of those, which, of course, never happens. But anyway, we're not at that beach. So I'm outside just walking around, blah, blah, blah. That night, we got to do the second show. For some reason, the second show was tough. The first show was a lot of fun. The second show, pretty much the same setup, but now they're just not cracking.
Was it the same people?
It wasn't the same people, but I am doing everything short of cartwheels trying to get these people. Now, Ron Pearson had been there. They loved Ron. I don't know if you know Ron mm-hmm. Pearson. Ron Pearson is a comic who also happens to be one of the, and it's measured, there's contests, one of the top 10 jugglers in the world.
Oh, wow.
So Ron literally is juggling. Ron can balance a ladder on his chin. Ron can do things that make these people laugh. I'm like, I got nothing. So the second night, we said, me and Jamie described it. The first night was fun. The second night was work.
Yeah.
And we grind through it and we get some laughs. And now the funny thing was, we didn't think we did that good. At the end of the show, we get a standing ovation.
Wow.
Because they just appreciated what it was. And again, they don't understand. See, the big thing with comedy, if you don't understand what comedy is, then you're listening to us literally. You're not factoring in irony, sarcasm,
nuances,
all of the things that make something funny. You're just listening to it literally. So like when I'm Michael Jordan, you're like, no, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, so it was that kind of thing. But they give us a standing O. They did appreciate it, and it was what it was. It was fun. It was interesting. It's an experience. Now, day three. Now, mind you, we fly all the way there. We're only going to be there for 3 days for three shows.
One more
right?
show.
So we got 30 hours in the air for 72 hours on the ground, you know. So the last day, I got nothing to do. I go to the mall. I said, let me go to the mall. Now, I've been to malls in the Middle East. To say they're rich is an understatement. You go to malls where Chanel and Louis Vuitton are the cheap stores.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it's mm-hmm. that. This wasn't that.
Mm-hmm.
This mall was like going to Target. Yeah. This they did have some upscale stores.
They have all the same stores.
They had some upscale. The funniest thing that blew my mind, there was Victoria's Secret.
Right.
I'm like, wait a minute. What are they wearing under these burkas? How's that? Who's going to Victoria's Secret inside? I wanted to just hang outside of Saudi of Victoria's Secret and see who walked in, but I'm not quite that creepy.
I think that under burkas, at home, they can wear anything they want.
They do, and they do wear anything they want. The other thing I learned was the colored, like the black burkas are the basic ones, but then they also have colored and fancy and this and that. And again, it's a function of spending more money and so on. I learned
some of that. And the fabrics.
The food was great. Mm-hmm. The food was great. And so I ate at the mall. So now we get a call about 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, to get a text. Show's canceled. What? Now Jamie and I are joking about what did we say. Like Jamie was joking. Jamie was saying something about dating. And he went, I think I, and Tehran's in the back of the audience yelling, no.
Yeah.
And then Jamie's like, maybe I went to no, right? So, and then I had done a joke about breaking my foot. And there's a big thing there with feet. To show one's feet is very disrespectful.
Yeah.
So now Jamie and I are joking, was it your dating joke
was
or my foot joke? Which one crossed the line and ended the show? So they told us no one bought tickets. They just didn't have a show. No one bought tickets. So Jamie knew another couple of promoters. There is a comedy club in Jeddah. It's just started. They took us to the old city of Jeddah, which was beautiful. Part of this Jeddah season, they're having an art festival in this old city. It was amazing. Like there were music acts, and some of the buildings were actually painted. Some of the buildings themselves were artwork, along with artwork on display, and people are out and about. So
good lighting and like a whole fair.
Yeah, we had fun. We walked around there. They took us to some phenomenal restaurant. Again, it's 1 a.m. and it's one of those places where there's 8 courses, like food just keeps coming out, and they're smoking the hookah pipes.
But no alcohol.
Blah, blah, blah. No alcohol.
Anywhere.
Alcohol's, not only is alcohol illegal, you can't mention alcohol. Haram.
Wow.
Okay. But anyway, so we have a great final night, right? And then we go back to the hotel. And as a matter of fact, we were having so much fun. It was like, hey, we got an airplane to catch. All right. We know you guys like to sit out here and smoke hookahs all night, but we got to pack and get to the. And the other thing that was hilarious, Jamie had brought merch.
Aww.
He brought DVDs, which didn't even work in their system, right? There's internationally DVD. But he said, hey, who knows? So
yeah.
So he had to get his merch back from the tent where the show was supposed to be because he left it there and the show was canceled. So anyway, he gets it back. We pack up the whole thing and we're on our way to the airport. We get a text from Eric Griffin. I got my money.
Oh, that's great. That's a.
So we ended up getting paid, and you know, we flew back, and then the flight back, my flight was miserable because there's nothing worse than rich children, right? Oh. Nothing more privileged than rich children. So we're in the business class, but there's kid behind me banging my seat. Kids are running back and forth, up and down the aisle of the plane. The little kids.
I know. It's like they have a little private
right.
And, playground and it's there, like, but there's other people.
And I just want to tell the parents, like, control your child. Now, Jamie's knocked out sleep. So it was it is what it is. I joke about it. They're kids. They're doing what they do. It's okay.
Yeah.
It was just annoying. But anyway, yeah, so we
what
get.
What a great trip.
We get back home, and, we got paid. And then I hear from the next comic, because it's tag team, right? So
yeah.
Finesse Mitchell is flying in as we're flying out. And Finesse is like, hey, I'm just going to sing Michael Jackson songs because I don't know what to do. Because you find out all these rules when you get there. Then I found out another comic who got there, Maximini, his shows were canceled because nobody was buying tickets. So right now, the gig is still going on. There's supposed
to
be like some more comics to go, but we don't know what's going. But here, this is the close of the Saudi experience. Do you know who's supposed to headline the entire Jeddah season festival?
Well, hold on. It's not, are you going to say somebody like Dice Clay or something like
no,
that?
No, it's not
shocking.
A comic. It's,
oh, okay.
It's an artist, but it's not a comic.
Oh.
Nicki Minaj.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Listen, with all of their rules, they're going to cut Nicki loose. And we were joking like, well, listen, Daddy don't care about comedy. Daddy like Nicki. So Nicki's supposed to go. I don't know if she's going to or not, but that would be the you talk about opening up to the West.
Yeah.
Well, you put Nicki on stage in a place where women are wearing burqas and where they just shut down the religious police 2 years ago.
Yeah. Now women are driving there now.
Women. Yeah. It's you know,
been slow progress.
It's a slow progress.
It's like generational.
And, yeah. You don't see it. It's, you know, it's kind of, again, the Middle East is very interesting. You have to go over there because, see, it's cultural, so they don't feel like they're being held back.
Right.
Because the women, they love taking care of the house and
sure.
the kids and this
sure.
and that. It's what they do. And the way they dress, that's normal to them.
Sure.
So it's not like you take someone from the West and put them there and they're like, oh my God, I can't do this and that.
No, not at all.
You know, just like when we were joking, like when they get here, when they come to the U.S. and you get off a plane in L.A. and you see the women in L.A., that probably blows their mind.
Yeah,
like,
right. Exactly.
These,
like,
why
would
naked
they,
women walking around?
Yeah, why would they want to do that to themselves?
Right.
Why would they want to be taunted or exploited like
right.
that? Like, don't they have any modesty?
So, yeah. So
it's not right or wrong. It's just where you are.
It's just different cultures. But
yeah.
But from a comedy standpoint, just it was such a challenge to figure out how to make them laugh.
Oh yeah.
That I love the fact that I was able to figure it out. And we had me and Jamie, you know, me and Jamie were like, hey, we'll always have Jeddah.
You'll always have Jenna. It's funny you were talking Jamie Kennedy and Jamie Masada.
Yes,
two Jamies.
Jamie Kennedy, I'm talking about. Jamie yeah. Kennedy and I'm just will saying, always have Jenna.
I don't have many Jamies in my life. There's two right there. That's sort of funny. Yeah, and you know, I think that part of why you pulled it off so cleanly is because you are a professional. I mean, you have had a lot of different things been thrown at you, and you do have to come off. And every show is a little bit different, and you never really know what you're walking into because you don't know who the audience is.
Yeah, this is the thing where you have, and that's where like the difference between a comic who's been doing it 5 years and a comic who's been doing it 15, 20 years, you know, at 5 years, if they drop you in Jeddah, you're in serious trouble.
Right.
Because you don't, you haven't been in this, you know, I'm fortunate.
It's all about flexibility.
Been all around the world. Right. I've done all these places so you can figure it out. But yeah, it's, you gotta be a pro, and there are some comics that would die a horrible death there or try to do their act.
Yeah.
And you're trying to do your act to people who don't even understand what comedy is.
Yeah, you can't commit to what isn't going to translate.
Right, right.
Yeah, so you have to be in the moment. You have to just try to do your best. You know, one time, this is like 20 years ago, but I found myself in one of those tents doing comedy at, it was called The Taste of Encino.
I remember that. Which, heard of The Taste of Encino.
By the way, tastes a lot like Glendale. But the point is I was there in this tent, and just like you said, it was a fair, and it was children and families, and now I'm standing there, and I'm the host, you know, so all I really have to do is just crowd work and just be, you know, but I'm trying to do acts, and I'm trying to do some of my material, and like, what was I doing? And my friends are sitting in the back, the other people going up, including Bobby Lee, he mm-hmm. was one of them,
yeah.
And they're sitting back, they're laughing at me, and they're like losing it laughing, because they know that I am dying, and that's just sometimes just part of it.
Yeah, so part of the game.
I was so new, and now that you are experienced, you know, that's not what's happening anymore. I'm very impressed.
Well, it was fun.
It does sound like a lot of fun, man. Listen, you guys, we got to wrap it up, but I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Make sure you follow me over there on Instagram and Twitter at Storyworthy, and follow Alonzo Bowden as well at Alonzo Bowden, and listen to your show, which I'm telling you, I just adore it. I never
thank
miss
you.
It. Who's Paying Attention? It's a great hook. It's very straightforward, no nonsense, and I just listen to it, and I think like, yes, that's what I believe. And I listen to like a lot of other shows like that too, like Rachel Maddow and stuff like that. However, there's too many bookends on those shows, you know, like coming up, here's what we're going to do, and this is what you just heard. Yeah, but what are you saying?
Right.
Just it's, cut the meat.
Yeah, you know, Lewis Black, who's
yeah,
a friend and one
him.
Of my comedy
love
heroes.
Him. Yes.
And they asked him, you know, why do you do that? And he's like, comics didn't want this job, but nobody else would do it.
Yeah.
So we become, you know, the Daily Show, Jon Stewart and Trevor Noah now and all that. Yeah, comics have become the topical, you know, storytellers, news giver, truth tellers.
Yeah.
We're the truth tellers.
I
that's
just
what we
heard
are.
Somebody say that the only person that's going to defeat Donald Trump is a comedian. Somebody like Jeff Ross goes up against Donald Trump and would slay him.
Well, you know, if the Democrats hadn't sacrificed Al Franken.
Yeah.
Right? They
really
sacrificed Al Franken. Al Franken would have taken Trump, and he would have done it so smooth
that
would have driven
example.
Trump crazy.
Great example.
Because Al Franken would be, like, he used to do that to Bill O'Reilly for fun.
Yeah.
Just for fun, he'd take O'Reilly apart.
And Bill O'Reilly, those guys, they don't know even what hits them because they're not hearing the words. They're scattered. They're not sure how
they
to
can't
answer.
Even, yeah, so...
Well, listen, man, it's an interesting time to be alive. I'll say that.
That's a nice way to put it.
I guess. Oh, my God. And listen, you guys, I want to thank the sponsors on the show today. Really, when you check out my sponsors, you're supporting me, and I appreciate it. And one more time, on behalf of the very talented Alonzo Bowden, really, I'm just so, so grateful to you.
Thank you.
Thank
Thanks
you, man.
For listening to my story.
Thank you, man. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying...
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.